Hi, this is On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner.
And this show is where we learn from Olympians and Paralympians how to be the best, or, you know, better than you were. A world record-breaking para-athlete, Scout Bassett, knows all about what it takes to be the best. Hey, Scout.
Hey, Eliza.
How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be joining you.
Likewise. Now, competition must take you all over the world, obviously before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself a good traveler?
I would say yes, just because I've had so much experience in it. Before the pandemic was the first year that I reached the 100,000 mile club, I guess, of flying in a year. And let's be very clear about that.
Yeah. Tricky way to say it.
Yes.
We also have Ed Harry here with us from the BBC. Ed, are you a nervous flyer?
I'm not. I love flying. I love getting to airports early because I just want to make sure I'm not going to be late.
And you like that?
I do. And I like buying a magazine and getting a coffee and all these. But I'm going to share something because it's a year the Olympic Games are in Japan. I was in Japan at the World Athletics Championships in 2007, really had a great time, and then I missed my plane home. You know, like an anxiety dream or the first part of a film when somebody wakes up, looks at the clock, realizes what's happened and panics wildly. That's what I did. We had a great last night. I'm reliably informed when a friend went to bed, I said, come on, stay up. What's the worst that can happen?
Oh, no.
I'll tell you.
No. Okay, so I have two follow-up questions. Have you ever missed a flight since?
Nope.
That wasn't of you. Okay, I figured nope. That. And two... When you say you like to get to the airport early, how early are we talking?
So if the flights are like 7 a.m. and I live near the airport, I'm about 20 minutes away, I'd like to be picked up sort of just before 5. So I'm at the airport like 2 hours before. So I throb through. I hate it when there are people in my airport. And the later you leave it during the day, when you go on, say, a family holiday, suddenly the airport's full of people. Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Eliza?
I mean, as a comic, I, you know, travel a lot. We're on the road all the time. And I'm surprised at how much I miss traveling at this point from how exhausting it had gotten for me. And I have missed flights. And I do not like getting to the airport early. I feel like that's time wasted. I would rather get there right in time.
I'm with you. I mean, one day this is going to cost me, I'm sure, something. I'm going to pay a high price for this. But I'm one of those people on a domestic flight. I want to be at the airport 30 minutes before we board. Like, and so when I walk to that gate, we are then boarding. I don't recommend it, y'all. Not a good way to go.
No. Oh, yeah. I am gripped with tension the entire time.
What's wrong with you people? Honestly. You know?
And the idea of sitting down for a coffee.
What? So we can get like $20 sandwiches?
Airport
and
sit around? Come on. So we can read a magazine?
Honestly.
Like, what?
They've got you, Ed. They've convinced you. We're bucking the system here.
They are people like him. Is exactly who the airports target, right? When you see those little thing noshkis and you're like, who buys this? It's people like him.
Mm-hmm. Ed.
Yeah. Ed. That wants to be there 2 hours before.
You know, different airports have like different coffees, or maybe little places that's juice and croissants. And I can think, oh.
Oh, no, Ed. No, they don't.
That you can't get anywhere else.
I'm in Paris. I'll just go and get my juice.
That isn't local to where you live. Okay. He's bought in. He's drank the Kool-Aid.
I need to be in a future of air travel advert. I need to be in their commercial campaign as well.
Get here a day early so you can browse the magnets.
A day early, that would be so him too.
Time we got on with the show and introduced our guest. Ed, who's on the podium?
Today's guest won Olympic fencing bronze in Rio in 2016, becoming the first African woman and the first Arab woman to win an Olympic fencing medal. That was her third time at the Games. Success didn't come overnight. Now it's gold at her fourth Olympics in Tokyo, which is the focus. Our guest is from Tunisia, and she is from a fencing family, and they have played their part along the way as well. Inez Boubakri, welcome. You are on the podium.
Hey, thank you. I'm happy to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, thank you.
So we're so excited to have you here. We've actually dug up some of some pictures from your social media and your past. Ed, what's the first picture we've got?
The first picture is our guest's greatest sporting achievement. So for you, Inez, so far that is Rio and 2016. And this is the moment, I think, immediately after you've received that Olympic bronze medal. You're wearing your red and white tracksuit of Tunisia. The medal is around your neck. But in this image, you're holding it up almost to eye level. And as I look across into those eyes, there are tears. Are they tears of joy? Are they tears of relief? Tell us what's happening in this moment.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It happened. A lot of things in my mind. A special moment, very emotional. I was super happy and super proud because I had a lot of pressure. When I won the bout, I was happy, okay, because I won and I get the third place, but I didn't realize yet. But once I'm at the podium and once I got the medal and I touched it and it was heavy, it's heavy medal. If we compare of the medals of the World Championship, of African Championship, the Olympic ones is the best and it's heavy. So I was looking to myself and I was holding the medals and I said, yes, I did it. I was really super happy. And at this time, you remember all what you did as a sacrifice, how it was hard to be like the first African and Arab woman in fencing, because in fencing, we don't have this tradition. When I start to be like one of the best in the world, if I, without pretension, I can't told it, the people was like, oh, she's from Tunisia, how she can do and to be one of the best ranking in the world. And when I get this medal, I said, I don't have to prove anything. I did what I do. I deserve this medal. I was thinking of my family because my family couldn't come to Rio, and especially my mom. And I was happy for her because she was a fencer and she wanted that medal. She was support to realize what I did.
We want to know where you keep your medal.
Oh, let me tell you something.
Tell us.
When I won the medals at Rio, I couldn't sleep. But I slept 2 or 3 hours, and the 2 and 3 hours I was holding my medals with me. I slept with it. After, it's okay.
You slept
I
with took your it. Medal.
Yeah, I slept with my medal because I was super happy. And after, I keep it in the wood box, and it's in my room. And maybe in the future when I will stop my career, I want to make like not wall, but yeah,
display.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay.
I'm still thinking. Nice. I don't know yet. We will see.
Well, you might want to wait until you add maybe another medal before you do that.
yeah, that's it. I'm waiting. Now my objective is I have Tokyo, so I hope I will win another medal.
Going into Rio, you had knee problems. So bad you had to have surgery after Rio. And by the time you were in the bronze medal match, you had back pain as well, and it wasn't going very well, was it, the bronze medal match? How did you go from the pain and the despair of that to think, no, I am not going to be beaten today?
Yeah, when I started the match, I was like losing I think 6-2 or 7-2, and I saw, and one time we have like a rest for 1 minute, and my coach, he was, oh my God, he makes me afraid because he was red, because I was not fencing, it was not my level, and he was red and told me, what are you doing? You won't give up the match? I hear him, but I was thinking of a lot of things like, wow, Ines, you are here for medal. I can't go back home with fourth place. I prefer lost in like in the first round. So I said, okay, Ines, forget the pain. Fans, enjoy. And suddenly, I don't know what happened. Beam. From 7-2, I was leading. And I saw the Russian girl. She was totally lost. And I saw in her eyes, and when she looked to her coach, she was really lost. And I was more confident and more powerful. So I said, okay, this match is for me. And yes, I got it.
So you said that it wasn't your fencing at the beginning. What is your fencing? What is the Inez style of fencing?
The Inez style is very aggressive. And sometime my coach told me, you have to be patient. Wait. I want to do attack.
You have a sword in your hand, right?
I have a sword. I want not kill, but I want touch. So it's my character too. I am patient. I want to know everything. I cannot wait a lot. So my coach sometimes told me, wait, the duel make it more long. But me, I want attack to provoke and more aggressive. So that's why at the beginning I was like following her. She was leading. And that's why I was lost. But when I changed, I made more speed, more provocation. And it works really. It was very nice boat.
Yeah. I think you bring up something that's very interesting as a athlete. You mentioned that your aggressiveness when you decided to turn the switch of displaying your confidence, that you had been prepared for this, that you had really mentally already defeated your competition. And that's such a huge part of sport, is it's not always the physical aspect, but just projecting that you've got this, you know what you're doing, you're here to attack and to win. That's such a critical skill to have in competition, even when you're not feeling maybe your best, is just displaying that can really give you that edge, so to speak.
Yeah, at the beginning, when I start my high level career, I was like, you know, young, I don't have enough experience. So I was really more aggressive than before. I worked with psychological of sports to control my emotion, because sometimes it was very, very too much. So when I worked with the psychologist, I learned a lot of things, how to control myself and how to be confident. But I am still aggressive at the piste, but less than before, and only in the piste, huh? Because outside, people don't recognize me. Yeah, people said, is it Inez what we saw at the TV? Oh, how you do? So yeah, I am more calm outside when I'm with the girls and yeah.
What was it like when you took the medal back to Tunisia? Were you calm when you took the medal home? Did they have big parties for you? What happened?
Yes, I had like a president welcome at the airport. Yes, I was not, I didn't expect this. Big welcome, yeah.
This was the second ever Olympic medal won by a Tunisian woman and the first fencing. So what does that mean to you? Does that feel like a big responsibility or just a big celebration?
It's kind of responsibility, because there is a lot of young girl follow me, and I have like some pressure and some responsibility, because I want to show them how to get these medals and how to be, even not in sports and other career, that she can do it. Because it's not because we are like Arab or from Africa that we cannot. I said, just believe in yourself, be confident, and don't let people judge you. Don't let people judge you. Just do what you want and believe in yourself. And sometimes I try also to make part of this the family, because the family for me is very, very important. Because I was lucky, because my father was like open-minded. He let me go to training. My mom, she's sportswoman, so she gave me like freedom. Yeah, do what you want, because she trusts me. So the family is very important from the young age, that they have to support their kids.
So it's a family sport in many ways, not just because you have a family history of it, but because there's such a supportive team for you.
Honestly, I don't think that I could do this without my family, because when I move from Tunisia to France at 18 years old, my family paid everything. The federation and Tunisia didn't accept that I move on. So my family did a lot of sacrifice, because I have two brothers, and they were a little bit jealous, but they were happy at the end when I get the medals. So yes, why all the money Ines took it, so yeah. Yeah, because you know, in France it's very, very expensive, so I had to find an apartment, to pay the club, to pay everything, my study. So, and this without my family, honestly, I can't do this.
So when you were growing up, I mean, I assume that your mother must have been a great role model, but as a woman in sports, in fencing, in the world, what other role models were important to you?
Oh, a lot, but role model, for me, it's more important that the role that the woman can play or can improve is in the world she exists. Whatever what she do as work or activities or anything. So for me, it's very important that we have equality between women and men. Unfortunately, this in the Arab world, if I can say, that they still compare the woman and the man, and she cannot do this because she's a woman. So I want to prove that no, whatever, we cannot compare. Sometimes men cannot do some things that women can do. I want to show, yeah, that stop this inequality.
So seeing women kind of do anything women want to do, it has been important, and you want more of that, it sounds like?
Yes, and more free, so she can be more free and she choose the work that she wants or the career that she wants. If she wants to marry, she wants, she can do it. She don't want to marry, she's like free. She's free with her life.
This is On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. Our guest today is Tunisian fencer Inez Boubakri. Do we have another picture, Ed?
We do. We do have another picture. And this is, well, you're standing on another podium, Inez, but it's more the kind of podium you might see a piece of art being displayed on. You are stood side on. Your arm and your foil, your fencing weapon of choice, are extended straight out, and you're holding your fencing mask under the other arm. And this is where I'm going to need some help in a moment, because you're wearing a dress and my grasp of fashion isn't so good. I think this is a fashion shoot, which is kind of building a bridge between your two worlds, between the sport that you do and maybe your passions away from sport, your passion for fashion and for art. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I like this shoot because it was like my first professional shoot. Nike chose me one between four girls, also Arab girls, to make campaign about how people will think about you when you do sports. It was more the message, more focused for the Middle East people and about how the family will support their girls. And it was mix between fashion and fencing, like you see in the picture with the foil and my mask with the Tunisian flag. And I was wearing very nice skirts from Yves Saint Laurent. I remember the brand.
Got a lot of ruffles, a high-low hem.
And I enjoyed because I like also fashion, because I spend a lot of time in fencing, in sports. We do, even I'm not practicing fencing, I have to practice fitness. So I'm at the gym and all time I'm in Nike suits or in sports. So when I am free and I'm in holidays and I have no sports session, so I want to put makeup and to wear nice clothes. So yeah, I like this one. What do you think, girls?
I think it's very cool. And I was going to, I noticed even what you were wearing today, the denim with
thank
the
you.
kind of flare and the matching earrings. Very nice, very nice.
Thank you.
I love when women athletes can combine sport with fashion.
Yes.
I think that's a big part of sort of sort of changing the perception of women athletes, because I know so many young girls feel like they drop out of sport or they don't get involved in sport because it's not very pretty or feminine.
Yes.
Is that part of, yes, you know, the goal that you're trying to work towards or to change?
Yes, sure. Because, you know, I already heard a lot of girls said, oh, no, I don't want to do sport or like strength in at the gym. I don't want to have like muscles like men. Or when I listen to this, I'm shocked because I said, no, it's not true. I'm practicing fencing for like more than now 20 years. And it's nice. It's helped my body to keep my body fit. And there is some exception, like sports like judo or weightlifting. You need to do some girls. Okay, they are more strong than other girls. But they like what they do and they are proud of their body. So we cannot judge the girls because of her body. But you can choose another sport. You can do whatever you like as a sport. And you are not obliged to be at the height level. Just try to make activities, sport, try a lot of things, and you will see what your body can do.
Yeah, you've made a sport, like, I just going through your Instagram, you can see that you're very fit and that you work out, but you also have quite a taste for fashion, and you are an Arab woman, but you, your style is not overly conservative. You know, you are proud to show your skin, and you know, has that, how that came about, and has that been received well, or do you get criticism for it, or what that's been like?
Yes, I am Muslim, but I am open-minded Muslim, so I respect everyone, and I want that everyone respect me as I am. But I like show my skin. It's because it's part of me, or I like. For me, it's not too much. I'm not like, if I can say the word, I'm not naked. But
no,
I'm
no, you're definitely not naked.
Yeah, it's for me. I respect myself, so for me that's enough. It doesn't mean that I didn't get some criticism. About how you do this, you are from Tunisia, you are Arab, and you cannot do this. So sometimes, actually, really, I can respect people because they don't like, but I cannot say you have to do like me, or it's part of me, so it's my choice. I don't make problems. I don't want to answer, honestly, because they want to express themselves. They are free, so they are free to say what they want. But it doesn't hurt me or touch me because I know what I do and I have like limits. My family, they are okay with me, so my friend too. So no, I'm okay with this. Yeah, I just enjoy what I do. If I want to go to the beach, I put my bikinis, but I don't show too much, but I'm not like covered. But it doesn't mean that I'm not Muslim, good Muslim. So yeah.
I keep thinking about what you were saying about women not wanting to build up muscles. And you mentioned that there were these, that you feel like people have preconceived notions about sport and it being masculine or and all that. What kind of preconceived notions do you think people have about fashion, on the other hand? Like, I feel like people often think that it's frivolous and not important. And it feels like it's become something important to you.
For me, I like following this because it's part of me, because I like fashion, and I feel it's make people think about other things, but it's not very positive things, because I see a lot of people now want to make sports only to lose weight, not to think about their health. Make a sport to have the good shape, to have this dress like the models or the influencer, how she share her TV show, and yeah, there is the positive and negative thing, yeah, like everything.
You said earlier that your attitude when you're not fencing is completely different than your attitude when you're fencing. But I have to wonder, what kind, are there things that you have learned through all of this training that do apply to the rest of your life that has changed the way that you live?
Yes, sure, absolutely. First, it was like I tried to be more patient, even in the life, to take decision, I take my time. And it's like in fencing, take your time. I have to do decision and action. In normal life, also, I'm more quiet. And I said, okay, breathe, like I do before the competition, breathe, take decision after. Don't be nervous because you will regret after. And especially also, something very important for me is respect. Believe me, guys, in fencing, because you have to respect the referee. Even he's very bad referee, he make you lose, you have to respect him. You have to respect referee, your opponent, because in fencing, before you start the match, you have to salute the referee and your opponent. And even after the match, at the end, whatever the result, you are winner or loser, you have also to check hand of your opponent and the referee. So I learned a lot of things, because even in the normal life, sometimes people are not like respectful, but I prefer be respectful and to not do like problems.
I agree. I think that's an important and an interesting point, that you don't have to like it, but you have to respect it. And you can keep working to get different results that you want, but you respect the process along the way.
I do have a question for you about sort of the future and what you see. What are your hopes, you know, in terms of the future? And what do you want your legacy to be in sport, outside of sport?
Actually, I don't know when I will stop my career. Sometimes I said maybe it will be my last Olympic in Tokyo. Sometimes I said, why not? Maybe because in fencing career, we can go even like 40. So I will think about when I will stop. But for the moment, I want to be focused only for Tokyo, and then I will see. But sometimes thanks God, I did all my diplomas. I have master in sports psychology, and I can be a PE teacher. So after that, after my career, I dreamed about making an academy, like international academy, because I'm thinking of people like me, people who don't have a big structure, big clubs, and a lot of fencers to practice and to have a good level. So my plan, and I hope it can work, to build an academy, an international academy, and like this, all the people who don't have very big federation, they can join our academy, and I can share with them how to improve in fencing and my experience, and to go with them to the competition, to be their coach, you know. And outside, I don't know, maybe like a fashion store. We will see.
Maybe create your own label.
my own brand. We will see. With Mediterranean touch and Oriental touch.
Very cool.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Elisa. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned so much about fencing and you, and I love talking to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me.
Oh, she was great. I loved that.
So interesting, and a lot of passion and intensity, but in a way that I think really helps her for what she does.
Yeah, and a lot of energy also, which I can understand why she yes. had to figure out how to like focus that and control it.
Harness. Yeah, yes.
Very energetic.
We got that. Yeah, I'm very aggressive in my fighting style. I had to rein that in. I'm very aggressive in workouts, especially when the workouts I don't necessarily want to be doing. Yeah, I think, and as well, just this kind of, through telling her story and talking about herself, kind of agitating all the way through for a change in terms of the country of her birth, the country she won her medal for. It would be great if they could do more for women's sport. It would be great if they could do more, not just in the sport she competes in. And just gently, I think, by example, by demonstration, because if you do invest in this, and if you do kind of slightly shift your perception of what you think someone is capable of, then more people can do what she did. But and I love the fact as well that it is a family. Her mother went there first, her mother went to the Olympics, and her family was so supportive all the way through.
Yeah, it's like a boldly passive move. You know?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I also, as I said, I loved what she was saying about the importance of sport and exercise and paying attention to your body as a woman, and not being scared of doing that, because I think there is a lot of messaging that's not feminine.
Well, I mean, here in the States, we see that young girls drop out of sport at more than double the rate of boys by high school.
Yeah, see, and I didn't by never getting into sport.
And that's part of it too. And so often I hear, even with, you know, especially with girls with disabilities, that sport is something that they think is for like tough boys, right? And then you add a component of a piece of adaptive sport equipment that is already very masculine looking in its nature, and, you know, she feels even less inclined to do so. And so I think it's a really interesting and unique approach that Ines has in bridging those two. You know, she does it so well on her social media of displaying her athleticism, her fitness, her love for working out, but also pairing that with her love of fashion and kind of adding a bit of that touch of you can be both. Right? You can be both very athletic and toned and fit, and also be very feminine and stunning. And I think she does a really nice job of combining those sort of two ideas and concepts, which is not always seen in sport, especially for women in sport.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I joke about not doing sports, but I think I can very much relate to it through comedy, a field that is seen as traditionally masculine. And I think women in comedy have struggled with like, okay, how do I display my femininity and still have this part of me? How do I dress on stage as opposed to all these guys who can just get on stage and jeans and a t-shirt and the audience thinks the same of them?
As the parent of a 12-year-old girl, this is all kind of flying at us as parents. And in terms of sport, our daughter does sport at school. She does sport outside of school. She's really enthusiastic about sport. She's great at karate. And every so many weeks when she has karate at home via Zoom, that's been one of the ways it's had to be done during lockdown, she has to kick against something or someone.
You. Are you the target?
And, you know, and she packs a mean kick and a mean punch. But our concern as parents is that if sport isn't fun or interesting for her, we are absolutely determined that whether it's through how it's taught or how it comes to her or whatever reason, that if she wants to do sport, she's going to find the sports she wants to do, and we're going to support her in doing them. But the attitudes that Ines was talking about, they exist everywhere. They exist probably around the corner from where I'm sitting, around the corner from where we're all sitting. And things are changing, and, you know, also changing in the way that I hope this has ended, certainly here in the UK, this kind of, why is that man doing that sport? I think that's a traditionally not a very masculine sport. Male gymnasts, and we used to have that, and, you know, it's a bit disappointing every time you still see it, but I'm not surprised to still see it, unfortunately.
And I think it's not just the physical aspect, right? You know, when she talks about the future and what she wants to do next, and she thinks this will be her last games, not only because of the age factor, but also that there's not a lot of money in the sport or in what she's doing. And so she kind of feels like she needs to have another career. And I think that's also a reason why a lot of young girls really don't see sport as really a path or as a career, because, you know, for every Serena Williams we see, you know, 20 Michael Jordans, right, that are making really good money doing a profession and can set themselves up for the rest of their life in a short career window of being an athlete. And I've certainly been there too. When I started out doing this, I was living on my friend's couch in spare rooms and out of my car because there was just no money. You know, people weren't wanting to sign up to support Paralympic athletes, certainly female Paralympic athletes.
There's a middle ground too. Like, there, it doesn't have to be you stop or you become, you know, an elite athlete. There's still playing sport just for the fun of it, or even just for your body. And also kind of add to what you were saying, my boyfriend's daughter is 11 and she's going to the school where they integrate just exercise with their lessons. Like, they do a lesson and then they take a little break and they all do some sort of exercise together. And so it all kind of goes hand in hand, the intellectual stuff and the physical stuff, and they figure out how it's a full body and it all helps each other. And it's like, oh, I get how these kids are going to feel like, oh, jogging in the morning is a part of how I have a great day, not necessarily training for something or necessarily I have to punish my body so I get the type of body that I want to have. You know, it's a really cool kind of thing that I wish I had had, as exercise is just another thing that you do to become the person that you want to be. I don't know. It's cool. I went off subject. Sorry. Well, that's it for me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry. If you want to see the photos we've been talking about, head online and search for BBC Podium. And join us next time for more of this.
Today, I'm the only patient in that hospital room that's still alive. So I hate that I had the luck to recover.
He survived cancer before winning Olympic gold. Martin van der Weeden on Podium next time.